A half century ago, the United States led an effort to build a road all the way from Canada to the tip of South America, called the Pan-American Highway. But where South America joined Central America, the road builders ran into a roadblock, the Darien Gap. This untracked stretch of virgin forest between Colombia and Panama is now a haven for paramilitary groups and drug smugglers. Every year, a few daring trekkers try to cross the forest, drawn by its pristine ecology and a sense of danger. One of them is Jenny Aaron Smith, who recently wrote about her journey into the Darien Gap in the New Yorker magazine, and she joins us from Colombia. Welcome to Living on Earth.
Hi, Steve. Thank you.
Jenny, you'd think that that Pan-American Highway would have made it all the way from the bottom of South America to the Yukon and Canada. What happened, and how has this land remained undeveloped all this time?
You know, this is a mountainous region, but also has a lot of wetlands. And in the 1950s, when support for the Pan-American Highway was really high in the United States, they tried to determine whether or not there's solid ground to build on, and there just wasn't. So it was ceased out of engineering concerns originally. But then what happened was, in the United States especially, you had new environmental laws passed that bore on places like the Darien region of Panama. And so the biological importance of this pretty much virgin rainforest caused the Sierra Club to sue the U.S. Highway Administration to stop construction. And so construction stopped, and, you know, there had been talk through the 90s to continue building the Pan-American Highway to finally finish this last piece. But the Colombian conflict prevented that from happening.
Now, you're not the first, obviously, to travel in this area. There is a rich history of people going into the Darien Gap and, in fact, trying to cross it to get all the way from Colombia to Panama. Tell me a bit about that history.
Yeah, in the 1960s, the Darien Gap was seen as a challenge for automobile companies because, of course, this was the part of the road that didn't exist, that had yet to be built. So they tested their cars in the Darien Gap. Sometimes some of the expeditions took like more than 2 years as they hacked apart trees and cut trails and floated, in some cases, their Range Rovers and Jeeps. And then for other people, it became sort of a personal spiritual quest. I know that the writer Wade Davis had done it, and there are many others. But then in the 90s and the early 2000s, it became a temptation for danger seekers. And so there was one famous case of a journalist named Robert Young Pelton who attempted to cross the gap with two backpacking kids, really, he had just met, and all three were kidnapped. And that really did a lot to dry up not just tourism in the gap, but also science and the presence of foreigners, period.
So who crosses the Darien Gap these days?
Well, right now, it's very interesting. There's a profusion of illegal immigrants, many of them starting in Asia or even Africa.
Asia?
Asia, yeah. For some reason, a couple years ago, the Colombian authorities started discovering groups of Nepalese in the Darien. You know, the photographer for The New Yorker talked to one of the coyotes involved in this on the Colombian side, and he said that the Nepalese were great crossers because the mountains were not daunting to them.
I imagine not.
They're tough as nails. Yeah.
What's the goal? I mean, Panama is Valhalla?
The ultimate goal is the United States. So this is one land crossing that allows them to get by sea to South America and then over land into Central America and then hopefully the United States.
Hey, Jenny, tell me about your trip, some highlights and where you started and how did you travel?
So the plan was to edge our way up the coastal towns to the border with Panama, dipping at least once into the interior. The plan was to attempt to get into a national park called Los Catillos National Park, which has been closed to the public since 1996. Los Catillos is a really big and splendid park, and it's a shame that it's closed. And it almost exactly fits the original route of the Pan-American Highway, so that if the Pan-American Highway were to be built, it would cruise right through Los Catillos. So that was the plan. What happened is that in a number of circumstances, we were foiled by rivers that would rise without warning. You know, in the Darien region, when the river's high, you simply can't cross. We were traveling on foot most of the time or on animals, on donkeys or horses. It's really the only way.
Now, these days, who is living in the forest?
Well, you have three basic groups of people living in the forest. You have descendants of African slaves who escaped Spanish slaving ships in the 16th century, if you can imagine, and have effectively lived in this region ever since. They, in many cases, have more claim to the territory than several of the indigenous groups who were historically nomadic, but who also live in the Darien Gap. And then you have a class of Colombian settlers who are attracted to the Darien Gap for different reasons, but some of them are ideological. They're sort of going off the grid.
Now, you wrote about some interesting characters in your time there. Tell me about Ruthie.
Oh, what a lovely woman. This was a lady who lived in a town called San Pacho, completely cut off. She had arrived there in the 90s or early 2000s from Medellin, when Medellin was, you know, suffering pretty high levels of violence and a lot of people wanted to escape. And she had a dream of a plot of land. And she had six children at the time. And she brought them to live in this small town, which is served only by a single merchant boat that comes once a week, if it comes. And they eked out a very, very tough living in this town where she now owns a general store and is sort of a den mother to many. One of the complications of the Darien Gap is that there's no real state or governmental presence. This has provided a big opportunity for drug traffickers and gangs. So the town of San Pacho, where Ruthie lives, is essentially governed by paramilitary thugs. And one of Ruthie's daughters, she had, you know, the six kids, she had now five surviving. One of her daughters had been killed by the paramilitaries. And she was very hesitant to talk about it when we came back to her and asked about it. So there was a sense of, you know, people who had come to this place to be free of government, to be free of the state, of urban life. But at the same time, they paid a very heavy price because what substituted for government were armed gangs and you had no recourse against them.
Jenny, when did you feel that you were in danger?
Well, I didn't actually feel that I was in great danger through this trip because I had a very good guide. A young Colombian guy who brings groups of people 10 or 12 times a year into this region out of a nearly patriotic desire to show it to them. Colombians these days are very eager to see parts of their country that have been blocked to them because of the conflict. And so he has a lot of takers and he knows every cow path in this region. So I seldom felt in danger when I was with him. And he actually knows the paramilitaries. They're quite familiar with him and his tour groups, and they let him pass. Without him, I can imagine that I probably would have been terrified.
So the Darien Gap is a destination for adventurers. But as the opposition of the Sierra Club to the Pan American Highway shows, the ecology has to hold some amazing biodiversity. Tell me a bit about that.
The interesting thing about the Darien Gap is that this was an almost entirely unstudied area that was, because of its unique geography, because it had risen from below sea level more than once, it had isolated various species, and it was something of a laboratory for evolution. And that thousands of species remained to be discovered, and, you know, many of the known species remained to be studied. So it was something of an ecological paradise. And large scientific institutions like the Smithsonian, they set up offices in Colombia to study the Colombian side of the gap. So it was hugely attractive to ecologists and biologists in the 1970s and 1980s. Later on, when the gap became, you know, a refuge for armed combatants like the FARC and the paramilitaries, that was when science sort of dried up.
So things slowed down, but now, as I understand it, some of the braver Colombian researchers are beginning to come into the gap and learn about the species that live there. How's that research progressing?
I think that's one of the most inspiring things that I discovered was that young and brave Colombians are willing to go in and do the type of long-term biological surveys that are needed in this region. There are international groups that will come in for a few days, for maybe a couple weeks. But really, the studies in which somebody has to live, for example, in the Los Catillos National Park and track a species for months on end, that's really being left to young Colombians. I met a number of people in their 20s who have carried out long-term research projects in the gap, and some of them don't even have their undergraduate degrees yet. So they are bravely filling the hole that's been left by the large scientific institutions.
While you were in the Darien Gap, there was a moment. There was a moment that brought it all together for you. What was that moment? And can you describe it for me now?
I mean, the moment that brought it all together for me was when I had gone into the forest with Sergio, the guide, and we were looking for a place to bathe because there was no water in town. And we hit upon a troop of maybe 12 or 15 cotton-top tamarins, you know, or it's a species of primate. They're kind of little, and they've got these beautiful, funny white crests and little prune-like faces. And, you know, we encountered a troop of them drinking water. I almost felt like I was violating their privacy as I watched them. And then something like an hour later, as we exited this beautiful forest that could sustain these endangered primates, you know, we were greeted by effectively a paramilitary, a thug, who wanted to know what we'd been doing there. So I thought that that was somewhat something of the problem of being in the Darien Gap. You have this tremendous ecological treasure, but look what you have to go through to get to it.
Jenny Aaron Smith's article about her journey into the Darien Gap is in the New Yorker. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve.